Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining me on the Commons today, we have someone who hasn't been with us for a while, Don Schellhardt. Don is an attorney, but he's also president of the two-year-old organization called Hams for Action. And we'll find out all about it. Don, thank you so much for joining us today. Always love having you with us.
It's nice to be back here again. It has been too long.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, I think it's been a couple of years at least.
Oh, Don, how did that happen?
I don't know. Probably me traveling around the country too much.
That's true. I mean, that is true. You're always gone. We need to find you a nice, comfortable, cozy HOA and get you settled in once and for all. Make you president and you'll stay put for a while, right? Yeah, I don't think he likes it, folks. The last time you were on, I don't think you had a ham license. But you do
now.
Now,
yes.
You do now, and you're actually a hammer.
Yes, KI4PMG. I haven't been on the air very much because I haven't lived in places where I could go on the air very much, but I do hold a ham radio license now.
Oh, you don't happen to live in an HOA right now, do you?
Actually, I do.
Oh. These are not crocodile tears. It's a real tears, Don.
Yeah, well, I'm even apart from that, I would have problems because I'm a renter at the moment. I'm a tenant, so it's not a homeowners association, more like a condominium association.
Same
but
thing.
I'm sort of double bound because I've got their rules, and also just in general, landlords tend to be skeptical toward allowing hams to put up antennas.
All right. Let's get serious.
Okay.
Years ago, my first introduction to ham radios, the antennas were, you know, they were up, they interfered with the flight pattern, they were so tall. But that's not the case anymore, is it?
Oh, no. And I'm not sure it ever really... there were some interference problems that got attributed to ham radio incorrectly, and then there were some others that were caused by defects in some of the equipment being used, but that was fixed by a matter of federal law. So, for example, some TV sets that were susceptible to ham radio interference were.
Yeah, I had one of those.
That's been fixed now. Perhaps one of the key points we want to stress at Hams for Action is that antennas come in all sizes. Now, hams have a natural tendency to favor as much ham antenna height as they can get because the higher it is, the better the reception and the more wavelengths they can access. But in fact, we've said on numerous occasions that you can get quite a bit of reception with 20 feet or 3 feet above the roof line, whichever is higher. And that's what we recommend in general, something in the 20 to 40 foot range for HOAs. That's in comparison to 65 feet, 100 feet, even 150 feet that's commonly found outside HOAs. So we've been willing to say, yeah, we'll trade off some reception for aesthetics.
Well, but you can get them even smaller.
Oh yeah, you can also get window antennas, which are about 3 feet, and that's what we're asking landlords to consider allowing people to install, and they're not that much better than nothing, but they are an improvement over nothing at all, and it's probably about the only practical way you're going to get ham radios into apartments. But in general, you can get them anywhere from window size on up to, you know, 150 feet on top of a big tower. And we recognize why HOAs have a problem with a higher antenna.
I don't.
You don't? Okay.
I really don't. I think that we've become a nation of intolerant, busybody, authoritarian little Nazis running around. I really do. I'm all for not intruding on the neighbor. I'm all for working with people and not being obnoxious or just overstepping my bounds. But I don't really think that I need a third person walking around deciding that I can't have something because it offends their sensibilities, their aesthetic sensibilities. And that, in essence, is what we have. That's where we are now with all of this nonsense in HOAs.
Well, they've certainly overreached, and at Hands for Action, we're trying. We're not taking a strictly, small L libertarian position, which would be, allowing people to put up whatever they want. We've been trying to compromise because we are dealing with people who are so terribly concerned with aesthetics. But I can resonate somewhat with what you're saying too.
I don't know. I just think that we've taken life, which is short enough as it is. You don't have indefinite time. And we've just made it so complex, so complicated, and so miserable because a few martinets have been given power and they've allowed it to go to their heads. And that's what it comes down to. I mean, if you lived next door to me, Don, and you had 150-foot antenna, I probably wouldn't like it. But I probably, unless it interfered with what I was doing, I would recognize that that was your property, your home, and your life. And I would not make you take it down to conform to what I thought my life should be like. And that's what we have in HOAs.
Oh, I agree with that description.
Well, you were worried we wouldn't have anything to talk about now.
I wasn't. This always happens, just for the benefit of listeners, Every time I'm about ready to get on here, I say to Sue, I don't think we have enough material to fill an hour. And always says, don't worry.
I'll get on my soapbox, Don, and I'll start spewing stuff. We'll keep it. All right. You sent me a press release, and you said that Hams for Action, which is the organization that you preside over, is trying to get HOAs to recognize basically that people have ham antenna, or there are hams who live in HOAs and they would like to be able to use their equipment, and you wanted to find some middle ground and find some way that everybody could be happy. So the hams could use their radios and the HOA busybodies could probably not toss their cookies every time they saw, an antenna. I mean, what else do you say? Am I on the right track here?
Yes. Basically, we just a little background there. We tried to get the FCC to step in and mandate reasonable accommodation of ham antennas by HOAs. And that was turned down by the FCC staff. We appealed with the full commission, and it was turned down by the full commission as well.
I'm glad you brought up the FCC. How do ham antennas differ that much from and the philosophy behind allowing homeowners to have TV antennas or satellite dishes?
Well, satellite dishes and TV antennas are protected by law largely, I'm going to get to trouble putting it quite this bluntly, but largely because the interest groups behind them have the clout to insist on their being protected. The satellite dishes, are a major commercial activity, and there was a lot of resources put into having them, in effect, exempt from HOAs.
But the rationale, Don, was that it was a First Amendment issue, that it was your right to free speech. It's my right to free speech to be able to sit in my living room and turn on my TV and get whatever channels I want to get. Is that correct?
I'd say it went broader than that. It was a sort of an open commerce issue too. I think the FCC felt, well, if the frequencies are available for competition on the, between cable and satellite and over the air TV, then, you know, let the games begin. Let's see who has the most appeal in the marketplace. With ham radio, it's different, and I think actually the protected status should be superior to simply commercial stuff, because
it is it really and truly is free speech issues. It's impeding on your free speech to communicate with other hams, whereas, you know, sitting in front of the dummy box, the boob tube, is not necessarily.
Yeah, is my ability to have a conversation with someone in Bangladesh over my ham rig less important than my ability to? Well, I mean, you still got language difficulties, but yeah, you can talk to people all around the world, you know, including Bangladesh.
Really?
Yeah. But
it's not the other side of town.
Well, again, that's partly a function of ham antenna heights and the topography and so on. But we have members with 20-foot tall antennas, which are considered pretty modest, who have contacted folks in 100 countries in a span of 6 months. So, I mean, that's pretty much talking to the world.
So that really and truly is a First Amendment issue.
Yeah, when we stress more powerfully or somewhat more emphatically, because it appeals to people's direct self-interest, to tell you the truth, is the ability of ham radio to operate as an emergency communication system. And in a lot of it's almost unique among communication systems in that it's highly decentralized. You don't have a few studios here and there. You've got millions of hams around the world, individual broadcasters, if you will, not literally broadcasters, but transmitters around the world. And many of them, if not most of them, are battery-powered, so they can operate even in a power failure at least for a period of time. And this gives the fact that they're so spread out and not dependent on centralized communications and not dependent on centralized power supplies, at least not dependent 100% of the time, really makes them very valuable in the event of a disaster of some kind.
Well, I had heard, I mean, I'm in my ninth year doing this show, and I hear from people around the country, and I had heard from hams before saying, hey, they won't let me put my antennas up, and while emotionally I was with them, but when you had a little old lady who was being foreclosed on, and someone who wanted to put an antenna up, and as a volunteer, and with so much time, you know, what do? You go to the little old lady who's losing her home. And so I would talk to them and I'd say, yeah, I really feel for you. But it was Nick Leggett who pointed out to me that when there's a disaster, it's the hams and only the hams that can get through, that can communicate. And when we had 911 here in Washington, ours wasn't as bad as New York, but the Pentagon was hit. Everything closed down, Don. Everything closed down. You couldn't get on the phone. Cell phones were jammed. You know, they're now talking about jamming cell phone activity just to prevent people from communicating. But
on purpose, the idea is if we keep everybody from using the cell phones, we keep the terrorists from using the cell phones too.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that's such a smart policy, but anyway, they're talking about that.
Yeah.
Shutting them down on purpose.
Yeah. So, I mean, in an emergency, you're left with one medium, one way of communicating, and since we're turning everything into this massive HOA in this country, and HOAs don't like antennas, and therefore they're banned, we're basically cutting off our noses to spite our faces, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly preaching to the choir on that one, and I want to say, although, you know, I don't want to do anything to disparage the importance of saving little ladies from foreclosure or anyone else from foreclosure over some of the petty stuff that HOAs get involved in. But, you know, we don't have unlimited resources. In the case of Hams for Action, we've chosen to focus in just on hams. But it's not simply for the sake of perpetuating a hobby, although it is a nice hobby to have. We also see it as protecting the public interest. I see myself and all modesty aside as being engaged in life-saving activity here. You know, I mean, I think that the more ham antenna radio antennas are up, the more lives are going to be saved in the next disaster. And maybe that's an overly dramatic way to put it, but that's honestly how I see it, you know, myself.
Let me ask you a technical question.
Okay, I'll try to do my best. I'm more of a lawyer than a technician, but go ahead.
Oh, well, me too, but... and I didn't go to law school.
You're sort of self-taught after all these years on the air.
But technically, does each ham radio have to have its own antenna? Is it possible to have a centralized one and everybody use it, connect into it, or is that technically possible or not?
Well, we have what we call club antennas, where everybody has to physically meet in one spot and they share use of a transmitter. And we also have what's called repeaters, which are things which enable a ham to get a signal relayed over an intervening radio station to somebody else. So in that sense, but basically every individual unit to get on the air, you need an antenna.
So basically it's something that is necessary, like needing a mic to do a radio show. You can't do it just by osmosis or mental telepathy.
And again, at the risk of maybe pounding a dead horse here, or overstating, you know, the same basic point, if you ban ham radio antennas, which most HOAs do completely, if you ban ham radio antennas, you ban ham radio. You can't really separate the two. And you have a double impact here. The immediate impact is that the people without the antennas can't get on the air. The longer term impact is that the people who are now on the air have a hard time replacing themselves. In other words, finding new people to in upcoming generations to take on the task. Because you're not going to go into ham radio in the first place if you can't get on the air. I mean, that's, you know, pretty obvious. And so you now have a lot of the country where there may be some hams, or well, there are hams living outside of HOAs, or much less rarely living in a relatively tolerant HOA where they can do something. But you have these, existing hams, and but when they try to recruit new members, it's hard because, you know, half the country is under HOAs, basically. That's a rough estimate, but I think it's close enough. Half the country's under HOA. So half the people who might in the past have been recruitable as new hams are pretty much taken out of the recruitment pool. And unless this is reversed, it means, you know, that the number of hams in the United States, at least, is going to shrink significantly over time as we, you know, depart this mortal coil, the people who are hams.
Have the numbers shrunk considerably?
We've been able to stay fairly close to stable the last several years, but they have been shrinking overall. And they seem to have bottomed out in part because the FCC eliminated the requirement that hams have to know Morse code. And that reversed a period, you know, a period of decline that brought us up to, that brought in enough new hams that it sort of stabilized. But that's likely to be a one-time effect. And the longer trend, the average ham is, we don't know exactly, but the average ham is somewhere over 55. So we really need younger people to, take on the work. Otherwise, we're going to end up with maybe a ham community that's half the size of what it is now. And with that, we're going to have half the emergency communications coverage that we have now.
Did ham sort of grow up in households where their parents' fathers were ham operators, or is it something that most hams just decided they wanted to pick it up for some reason?
Most hams, and I'm speaking very much from anecdotes here rather than any kind of scientific survey, but most hams that I know did not pick it up from their parents, but they did pick it up when they were kids or very young adults, say between the age of maybe 12 and 22. It seems to be an activity that appeals to people, particularly in that age. It's the sort of thing you can do out of your own home. At the same time, it can literally take you far away from home. You know, I mean, you can build something or buy something or build something in your own basement if necessary, and you know, be in touch with Syria or Brazil. And so this is coming. Ham radio tends to be available as a way of getting to see the world from home at a time when a lot of young people are kind of locked in physically to one location, but want to roam. So it's a kind of a nice way to armchair tripping around the world. Another thing that we found, and I want to mention this, is that often if you get people interested in ham radio, particularly if it's relatively young, say, you know, under 21, they often tend to develop interest in other technological type issues, particularly related to communications. I didn't mean issues, I meant technologies, communication technologies. Somebody was estimating that something like half the Apollo astronauts who went to the moon, half the lunar astronauts were hams when they were younger. Walter Cronkite was a ham. Quite a few of people in the media, you know, TV anchors and so on, started off getting interested in radio or TV because they got interested in ham, and most of them will tell you that. So I don't know, there are hams I know who have memorized this long list of famous inventors, famous media people, famous explorers who began as hams when they were, you know, during this formative period of their lives. So now we're sort of cutting that all off in an HOA. You know, a guy comes home from school, maybe he's heard about hams, ham radio, and he's interested. But there's no way he can work on it out of his home. He's just headed off at the pass.
We're talking to Don Shellhart. Don is president of Hams for Action, and he's making a very compelling argument for all of you going out and telling your HOAs that you want to be able to stick up an antenna and get involved and become a ham. It's a communication medium. Where does the word ham come from?
Actually, that's one of the great mysteries.
Oh, it is?
No one actually knows.
Okay.
I wish I could tell you. All I know is it popped up. The last report I heard was that it seems to have originated in Britain somewhere in the British Isles, but we really don't know where it comes from. My own personal theory is that it comes from the phrase hamming it up. You know, people when they like to talk a lot, you know, or like to be in the center of attention, can sometimes get called hams.
Well, yeah, and, sometimes what you put on the dining room table is a ham too.
Yeah, that's
it gets
true.
Carved up a little bit, and hams are certainly getting carved up by HOAs.
Actually,
don't you like that one, Don? Come
that
on.
That is good. I'll trade you another metaphor. I used it in an article one time. Since we're matching metaphors here, carved up by HOAs. I referred to HOAs as hams and HOAs as hams in a lobster pot. Because, you know, what's
they're
happening.
Getting boiled.
Yeah, they're getting, well, the thing is, the the lobsters never quite get the energy to climb out of that pot, or seriously try to pop.
That's because they're tied down, Don.
Yeah, well, some of them are tied down, but also the temperature is raised slowly enough that the temperature goes up slowly enough that they don't realize they're being boiled alive. And, you know, by the time they finally realize they're in peril, they've kind of lost most of their energy. And that's what I'm afraid is happening with ham radio and HOAs, is that because it's kind of nibbling away at ham radio, very slowly. You know, the 65-year-old ham who doesn't get replaced by the 17-year-old kid, because it's happening, you know, somewhat slowly. Not everyone is taking it as seriously as it is, but, you know, the temperature is rising and the lobsters are dying off, you know, so I don't think it's that crazy an analogy.
Well, I've been hearing from hams for a long time, and unfortunately some of them have been involved in litigation with their associations. There was one guy who said that he had taken down his antenna, but he had a flagpole, which was totally allowed. And the association just hounded him and hounded him and hounded him, and they insisted that he had an antenna stuck in the flagpole. And, you know, and of course these idiotic legislators give these associations the power to fine and then in some cases to foreclose, and in some cases non-judicially, to collect that fine. And you know, how do you prove, and even if there was, even if he had, he said he hadn't, he sold his house and he moved.
Well, actually, one of the things that we were looking to with some degree of hope as a way of accommodating HOAs was this very idea of antenna flagpoles, or flagpole antennas, however you want to phrase them. Because you can fit an antenna in there, and it reduces the visibility of the antenna almost to zero. And, you know, so we you know, and the flagpoles are now allowed under federal law, so the HOAs can't ban those, although they can regulate them. They can't ban them. And so, you know, one of the things that we're pushing is, why don't you allow flagpole antennas at the very least? You know, 20-foot flagpole antennas, you can't even see the difference from the outside. Now, this case where the guy, they can't prove that he had an antenna there, I don't know how they proceed without being able to prove that he violated the old rules.
But they just go ahead and fine, and they make life miserable. I mean, they just go out of their way to make life miserable.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the problems that's been raised to our approach, even the idea of a government mandate. Some people say, well, you know, if you have a really mean-spirited HOA, they're just not going to enforce the law, or they're going to, you know, harass people.
Oh, I know, because basically a homeowner is going to have to find an attorney, which is hard enough to do, and then find the money to pay that attorney, which is harder to do, and then go to court and take your chances in court. And I don't know what the judges have been doing lately, but I think they've all been smoking funny cigarettes. But personally,
this is getting off into another area. It's never been, to my knowledge, it's never been fruitfully employed, but as a legal argument. And I could be wrong, because I'm more a legislative and regulatory lawyer than a courtroom lawyer. But one argument I've always felt should carry some weight is this legal concept of an adhesion contract. That's a contract which courts have sometimes found non-binding because it was so standardized people had no alternative but to sign it. And I think that there's a famous Supreme Court case, somebody or other versus Bloomfield Motors, where this guy had a car contract, and I don't remember the particulars, but there was something in it that was that he wanted to make unenforceable, and the car dealer said, well, you signed a contract, and you know, you're stuck with it, and the plaintiff's lawyer came back and said, but this is a standard contract. You know, all the dealers in the area had the same contract. So he really didn't have a choice in signing this contract. It didn't really result from bargaining. So it has to be, under, that was an application of the Uniform Commercial Code, and it has to be an unconscionable provision, as we found unconscionable, which is not too tightly defined. And it has to be an adhesion contract, you know, there has to be no practical alternative to the contract terms that were accepted. But I'd really like to see somebody argue that in court. To my knowledge, it's never been argued, but that doesn't mean it hasn't been. I'm just not aware of it being argued.
I think it has, and I think what happened was about 20 years ago, different states decided that they were getting too many problems in HOAs and they wanted to prevent the problems, so they came up with these fabulous disclosure laws back in the late 80s, early 90s. And one of the big, you know, one of the big things was if you disclose it to people and they still agree to it, then they've agreed to it, basically. And I think the courts up to that point treated adhesion contracts or treated covenants basically as, you know, being, going more towards the person who's losing the rights as opposed to the one who's enforcing the rights. But when we started getting all of these these disclosure laws, and homeowners were given packets that were 6 inches deep in some cases and told they had to read it, and they had 72 hours. In Virginia, you have 72 hours to back out of the contract. And, you know, they give it to you at the last minute. You've sold your house, you've packed your bags, you're ready to move, and you look at this thing, and it's all legalese mumbo-jumbo. So you sign the papers, and you're stuck. And even if you decided, hey, wait a minute, I'm going to read this, and no, I don't like this, and I refuse to abide by this, I'm backing out of the contract, where do you go? More than 90% of all housing in Fairfax is in an HOA. Arlington has become, they've just torn down the entire county, and they've put in condos. You can't go anywhere. You can't get away from these bloody things.
Well, this is getting back to this strategy we were trying to, and it's not really a strategy, that would be an overstatement. This tactic we're trying with CAI, we're trying to see if we can get some HOAs to voluntarily allow ham radio antennas. And the thought was, on this particular issue anyway, if you can open up some competition between HOAs, then, you know, maybe you can create some market pressure to open more doors. So, you know, it's a buyer's market out there in real estate right now. And, you know, my thought was, you know, or our thought was, if one out of every five or one out of every three HOAs allowed ham radios, then, you know, that would be something buyers could use to maybe play one HOA off against another, or at least have somewhere to go if they don't like what they read in those disclosure documents.
They're not going to read the disclosure documents. They're too long, too lengthy, too complex, too complicated, too legalese. Nobody understands it. Not even the attorneys who wrote the damn things. And now these people are going back to the legislature.
Well, really, the time to have the disclosure is really before someone signs a contract in the first place.
Well, now you know what they're doing, and we're going to do a show on this, but in Virginia, they came up with Senate Bill 6016 that we've kind of mentioned on this show, and we're going to do a show as soon as we get the latest version. But in May, when they had the emergency session where they wanted to find money to build roads, they slipped in this Senate Bill 6016 that would give associations. Now, here's the way it would work. If, let's say, the board decided that they wanted to raise assessments or, you know, whatever the board decided, and they put it to a vote of the homeowners to amend the governing documents to give the board more power.
Yeah.
Because they felt that it was in the association's best interest. So they put it to a vote of the homeowners and failed to get it approved. They have to do that three times. They have to make a reasonable effort to get it approved three times according to this bill. And if the homeowners fail to approve the changes that the board wants, the board can then go to court and get a judge to make those changes. You're talking about an adhesion contract. You're buying into something. You're being given the disclosure package. You're told that, you know, to make the amendments, you're going to need X number of people to agree to the amendments. And now what we're doing is we're passing a law saying, oh, guess what? You don't want to make the changes. The board thinks it's a good idea, so we'll just go and get a judge to make the amendments. And that's perfectly legal.
This is not the law yet. It's been proposed, though.
Well, it was proposed. The only reason it didn't pass in May was because they decided it wasn't an emergency, but it is coming back. And I have not been able to get a copy of the new and improved version of this bill because I understand that it is being rewritten. The sponsor won't give it to me. The attorney who is writing the bill, who is a CAI attorney, who has written all of these CCNRs in the first place, the ones he wants to change now by judicial review, he won't answer my emails. And, as far as I know, it hasn't been introduced yet. And I have a feeling what they're going to do is wait until the last minute and just kind of slip it through. So that's what we're dealing with. And if it goes through here, the common thread is going to be CAI. And they're going to take it to every other state in the union. So, there goes your contract. There goes your, any notion of a democracy. That's gone way out the window.
It's interesting, too, to me to see the argument is often made that this is a matter of private contract rights. It's not, the government shouldn't get involved because it's private parties negotiating, and yet some of the same people are not at all averse to using government to back up the muscle of the HOAs.
Oh, absolutely.
Or even making them mandatory. In Fairfield County, I think for housing passed the first fair. Fairfax County, excuse me, not Fairfield. Fairfax County, Virginia, as I recall, all housing essentially past a certain vintage has to be in an HOA. It's county law.
From 1984, but not only does everything that's being built now have to be part of an HOA, but with the eminent domain, the ability to condemn property, they're going in and they're saying, redeveloping it. This older neighborhood is just not conforming to our idea of smart growth these days. So we're just going to take it away. And maybe there is no HOA there. Maybe this was built before this madness took a hold of this country.
But it's going to be replanted or planted anew.
Absolutely. No trees. It's all going to be an asphalt jungle, and then we're going to wail and whine about global warming and polluting the chest. It's just sheer madness. It's totally sheer madness. But let's go back to Hams for Action.
We wandered a bit far, and also I want to do a time check. I want to see how much time we have left.
We have about 15 minutes left.
Okay. All right. Could I make one quick point?
Yeah.
We were talking about litigation and so on, and I was musing about the adhesion contracts, and you were saying that that's been sort of blunted by the disclosure laws. Although, man, it's still like a crack at a case like that. But anyway, that's another story.
Take it. You're an attorney. I can't do it. I just pretend to be one.
I'd have to find a contract. I'd have to find a paying client.
picky.
That can be as difficult as the client finding a lawyer. But I want to say in general, despite the talk about litigation, sort of dollar for dollar, if you're going to be spending money on these battles, probably the most cost-effective way to fight the HOAs is legislation, or possibly in the regulatory sphere.
I don't think so. I think that legislation doesn't work. I think the going to court is a waste of time. I think the only way you're going to do much of anything is for the homeowners themselves to say we're not going to do it. They have, the homeowners, the individual has so much power, they don't use it. They expect you to fight for hams, they expect me to fight for something else. The fact is that the power is with them. They don't have to accept it.
But if they stand up, they might get dragged into court by the HOA.
No. You know what? If everybody stood up, they're not going to take everybody to court. It's when one person stands up or two people stand up, and then they get targeted, and everybody else is afraid of standing up because they might get targeted as well. If you all stood up, if everybody who believed in personal freedom stood up, there's nothing they can do.
You're right. You're talking about I think you're talking about a kind of unionization.
No, I'm not talking about a unionization. I mean just stand up and stop rolling over and playing dead. If you don't
you have to stand up in great numbers.
You have to stand up in great numbers, but how, you know, some people like HOAs. They think they're protecting their property values. Of course, they haven't looked at what's going on now to see that that's one of the big myths of HOAs. But you've got to stop being afraid. Find a backbone someplace and say, you know, get out of here. It's my house. Stop telling me what I can do. Stop snooping in my flagpole to see if I've got an antenna in there. You know, if you can't see it, what difference does it make? And even if you could see it, what difference does it make?
Well, yeah.
Okay, Don, back to hams for action. You went to the FCC. The FCC kind of basically told you to go take a hike, that you didn't have enough industry clout behind you to help you. So you went to our friend CAI and said, would you please work with us and see if we can come to a reasonable accommodation here?
Yeah, and it's probably it's not as wide-ranging an accommodation as you might think, but we had some points on which we reached agreement, at least tentatively, as an experiment. And the key point was they said, well, we're not, they said to us, we have nothing against ham radios as such, and we'd be willing to write an article encouraging HOAs to accommodate ham radios. Our objection is to having a government requirement that we accommodate them. So at our end, we said, well, if you'll encourage your members to accommodate them voluntarily, we'll suspend efforts to get legislation through at least long enough to see whether this approach works. So we have what might be called an experimental agreement. But they're aware that if after all this nothing happens, that we may end up going back to lobbying for law. We don't think that there's too much point in going back to the FCC. The FCC also turned down a similar petition by other people in 1999, so it's addressed this issue twice in a 10-year period, and so it didn't seem likely that the FCC would is going to help out. Although some of the grounds for their decision are questionable, they talked about they didn't want to get involved because this wasn't government action. And we pointed out that very often it is, in fact, government action.
It is government action.
But
they can't get away
with it. Anyway, they did have a statement in there saying, if Congress is persuaded to act, we will carry out the law. We will, of course, carry out the law with enthusiasm or, you know, with all due diligence. So I think what they were really saying is we don't want to be the ones to climb in the hot seat here and get darts thrown at us. But if you can persuade Congress to pass a law, then we'll carry out the law.
So, guys, contact your congressman.
Yeah. And we approached CAI because we felt like if we could get a voluntary agreement, it would be easier than lobbying Congress. But the thing has to work, you know. I mean, we're sitting there, and we said, well, you know, they published on it. They're also going to give us some information that we can pass on to our members about how to amend HOA regulations from the inside, how HOA, you know, residents can amend regulations they don't like. So we're waiting to receive that from them, but they're going to write up an article that we can put on our website. So they've been cooperating with us to a certain extent.
You sent out a press release, and you sent me a press release, and in the press release, you had a link to the article that CAI had posted on their website. And it is entirely my fault because I did not make inviting CAI a priority. I got busy. I sent them an email. You've been working with two members of CAI, and I sent them an email and invited them to come on the show today to talk about it. And I apologized for the last minute invite, and I got a very nice email back from Andrew Fortin. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
I got a very nice email back from Andrew Fortin saying that, late notice, couldn't do it. And, of course, CAI is getting ready to do their law seminar at the end of the month, so they were otherwise occupied. So my timing was really poor. But I decided to go and download or read the article on the website, and it's not there.
I had just recently, when you told me that, it changed. I can tell you that it was there as of a couple of weeks ago, and it's supposed to be there. So I don't know what's happened on their end. Maybe they archived it somewhere, but if they did that, they should have an archive section or something where you can look it up.
It should go there. You open the page and you click on the link. The links are still there on CAI's website, but the article has been deleted or moved. I couldn't find it. Maybe I wasn't clicking nicely enough for them. Maybe I was cussing them out at the time. I don't know.
I was on there trying to find it myself. So yeah, I don't know what happened. What I'm hoping is that it was simply archived and they didn't make a reference to the how to get to the archives. But
do you do that anymore? I mean, I thought that once you, I don't know. I'm not a technical person. I want to go back to, you had a number of different recommendations on how to do that. One of it comes, the last one, which is in, you had good, better, and best.
Yeah, best, we decided it was better, since we're talking about a range of voluntary things rather than sort of a one-size-fits-all regulation. We thought it better to give a range. So,
now, okay, yeah. I have a question for you, Don. The last one on all three of them is aesthetic and maintenance requirements, if any, should not add more than 50% to a ham's annual operating costs. What are a ham's annual operating costs?
Well, we didn't define that because it varies so much depending on what the size of the antenna is and what kind of antenna it is and what kind of support structure
ballpark.
It has. But I would say ballpark for a 20-foot antenna, probably we're talking about a couple hundred dollars a year.
So why would the aesthetic, a couple hundred dollars a year.
We're talking about things like they might require that the antenna be painted every year or every 2 years. I get a fresh coat of paint every couple of years. Something like that, or that it be painted, repainted a color that matches the house.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
Can you stick it on the outside of the drain pipe? Kind of hide it behind the drain pipe.
That's what we're saying is, okay, you guys may want to require some nice touches, or you may just, you may want to have it coated against rust, Now it's in the ham's own interest to have rust-proof antennas. But anyway, there may be some things you want to require for aesthetic reason. And so we kind of gave them a budget. And we said, if you're going to require something in the name of aesthetics that doubles or quadruples the cost of having the antenna itself, that shouldn't be cricket. It should be something that's a reasonable percentage of the cost of the antenna.
You're asking unreasonable people to be reasonable, Don? Come on. You ought to know better than that.
But, I could easily say, you can have a ham antenna, but it's got to be, you know, painted polka dots, you know, or whatever. I mean, yeah, God knows what
looks
people
like. It's
come
got
up
measles.
With. Yeah, you know, I mean, and so we wanted to recognize that the legitimacy of the aesthetic concern, you know, functions or aesthetic requirements that might be imposed, but say, you know, keep them within reason. If it's going to, you know, if it's going to double the cost of having an antenna, it's not a reasonable requirement.
Well, it shouldn't. I don't know. I think you're giving them credence where they don't deserve it.
Well, I'm disturbed about this article disappearing, but I'm going to check that out.
So, yeah, let us know how it goes. I had another question for you, and it's just totally gone right out of my mind.
Well, I can fill in with a real quick story.
Before you do that, would you please give us, you do have a website?
Oh, yeah, it's www.hfa, that's short for Hands for Action, www.hfa.net.
Okay. So anybody who wants to go and check it out can go to hfa.net.
Okay, my quick story is this, just getting back to the point of emergency communications, which I can't stress strongly enough as an advantage of ham radio. During Hurricane Christina, all the communications were down between New Orleans and Washington, D.C. Even the military communications were knocked out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and during that hurricane, the way that the President of the United States got in touch with the mayor of New Orleans was over a ham radio patch-up. That
wow.
was the only way he could confer with the mayor of New Orleans. So that they had a couple of conversations arranged by ham radio operators, and that was the link. So, you know, I'm not making this stuff out of whole cloth. You know, there really have been cases. Another one is Chernobyl. The first word that the world got about the Chernobyl disaster came from hams. The first word about the details of the tsunami that hit Southeast Asia a few years back came from hams. Yeah, if you're in a neighborhood that does not allow hams, you are really increasing your risk level.
That's a very good point, Don. That's a very good point. And all that information is on your website, yes?
Yeah, just generally, yeah. Certainly the story about New Orleans is up there and some other stuff, yeah. It's worth reading, and it's not a humongously long website. You can read it and the whole thing in an afternoon.
Oh, I remember what I wanted to say. I think there's so many people, organizations like yours, that, you know, you're interested in hams. There are other people who want to hang laundry up, and, you know, there's those of us who have, you know, maybe a broader thing. I think that we all ought to get together somehow under one umbrella group to give us a stronger voice.
I'm not against that. I kind of doubt I'm, you know, I don't know who would be the right person to spearhead it. Maybe you would be.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. But that's something that I think we need to think
what
about.
What you need to do, though, is you need to get people to rise above their own particular gripe, which I found is a problem with HOAs.
That's the point I'm trying to make, is that
in their own particular gripe and say, okay, I'm willing to make common cause with the guy who wants, or a lady who wants a clothesline out. I'm willing to make common cause with the guy who wants a solar collector on his roof, et cetera, et cetera. And even if that means that at some point in time they get their problem taken care of first, we're still going to stick together as a group.
Don, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on. Good luck, and I hope that you get something cooking and that you'll come back and talk to us again.
Oh, I feel free to invite me anytime.
On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.